Hey, you're listening to Block Thinking with Werner Puchert.
Welcome to the latest episode of Block Thinking. This week, Jonathan Gall.
Yay.
Is in the house. Jonathan is the co-founder of Block Thinking and disappeared off the scene because he started a business. And then I started my little operation and I realized he had a point doing a podcast and trying to establish a business and doing some project work it's tough to do. It's not impossible, but it takes some dedication. Something that I'm struggling with, Jono. But I thought that, and we actually had a phone call a few days ago, and we thought that it'd be a great, maybe interesting for people out there starting their own businesses to listen to us ramble on about the state of the nation and how things are going. So I'll stop rambling on, and Jono, maybe you can do just a quick introduction for someone who doesn't know you, and then how's it going, mate? What's happening?
Yeah, so I've been a product designer since a few years now. I'm also a front-end developer. And since, 1 year and a half now, I'm independent. I'm running my own stuff with ups and downs, a lot of downs. That starts worldwide. And yeah, Werner and I, we started the podcast, 1 year and a half ago, on the same time I became independent, and it's been a wild ride.
We kind of bound together through this event called Product Development Days in Krakow. I just said that like a real South African, Krakow. Krakow. Yeah, and the thing is, I think what makes our little adventure interesting for you listening to this is that I'm a South African. Where are you from again, Jonathan?
I'm French Caribbean. Straight from the sun.
Yeah, I mean, trying to make our way in a very interesting part of Europe, which has its ups and downs. But Jonathan, elaborate a little bit on what it is that you call your business.
Yeah, big time. So I'm located, first of all, in Kielce. So people listening to us not living in Poland might not know where Kielce is. It's an average town between Warsaw and Krakow. And I've been living there since a few years now. Same thing. So before I was working in Krakow as a product designer for a financial corporation, I was going back and forth Kielce, and at one point I decided, okay, it's time to try my own thing. Especially, interviewing all those guys during the podcast, and I mean, even starting the podcast, actually discussing with you, I was like, okay, I can have a shot at that. I can try to be independent. I've always been working for huge corporations during my whole career, so I didn't really have the opportunity to live this startup life. I mean, just a few months when I was still an intern, but other than that, corporation life
I remember you with your little suit on, dude.
Yeah, right.
You were quite a snappy dresser.
That was my life. Dude, right now I'm jogging. Day of work, I have my suit pants on. Some hackathon t-shirts. Yeah, I'm not really as good as before, definitely.
And the thing is, dude, just for context, right? So, I mean, I left, I think, my corporation job just after you. I think the difference between you and me is that I'm in Warsaw and you are in Kielce. Right? Yeah. Kielce. That's in England, right? The thing is, your environment is much smaller. I mean, the population there is completely, Warsaw dwarfs that, right? So, how have you been able to find business?
Yeah, that was part of the dance, actually. Yeah, so I moved in Kielce because, women.
Polish ladies, man.
Yeah, and we are living between Krakow and Kielce, and she had a good job on MC there, so we moved. For me, commuting wasn't so bad, so we decided to, try it out. Then becoming independent, I was like, I'm going to try to catch up with the local ecosystem, and that fell really flat because there is almost no local ecosystem. I thought I would try to commute between Krakow and Warsaw and perhaps find clients, go in meetups, the usual thing. It didn't work out that well for me, because I was sick for a time, first thing.
Yeah.
Don't get sick when you're a freelancer. Seriously.
Yeah, that's the thing. Dude, I mean, yeah. I can kind of echo what you're saying there, right? Because, I mean, this is like a continuance of our reflection of our post-departure. So the other thing that I wanted to say, you know, is that, and stop me if I'm rambling on too much, eh? You've got the right to do that. You've done it before. But I also had a bunch of plans when I left my corporation job. And yeah. I think the reality, and this is where you and me parallel, is that a lot of those plans don't actually come to fruition. And I think the first thing you need to do is if you're going to quit your job, move out, is like you have to have plans. So having something in place that you can actually fall back on or kind of align with makes sense, and then it helps you move forward. But be prepared for like 80% of those plans not to work out. Because I remember, I mean, a lot of people also have a lot of good intentions, right? So when you go on your own, they go, hey, don't worry, we'll look you up. We're going to work together a lot. And then nothing really happens. And Yeah, it's a big bummer, right? Because like building that business, you have to keep on talking to people, because when you've spoken to them at the point of your departure, they might have had a few ideas that might have fallen through. But then again, those ideas might rekindle, or they might see you in a whole different context down the line. Now, I'm going to share something with you, like that I found the first thing that was a big, a humongous problem for me, the fact that I actually, and I still don't have a proper value proposition. So the challenge I've had with finding business, and I mean, I've gained traction, but I think at the moment, the biggest problem I have, and one of the key pieces of advice that I'll give someone if they had to decide to go out on their own, is the fact that they have to really define what it is that they bring to the market. And then that defining of what you bring to the market is like, what kind of problems are you solving for other people?
It's exactly that, yeah.
I still struggle. A lot of people like, so what are you up to, Vanna? Like, yeah, I'm doing some UX and I'm looking at some experiences on stuff, and I'm doing this stuff, crazy things with college and blah blah blah. And then they look at you like, we really want to help you out, dude. And someone actually, one of our mutual friends said to me, Vanna, I want to help you build your business, I just don't know how to introduce you to my connections. Have you found the same thing?
I don't know, when I left my sweet corporate job, actually I didn't mind that it would go all well, because all my life before working for corporations, I've always been, you know, pretty good at what I was doing. I mean, I felt pretty good at what I was doing, because I got a lot of praise and I got titles and, you know, all that stuff that they throw at you at corporations so that you stay. I had to work for it, obviously. However, they make you feel good. They are really, really good at that. And I was like, okay, I'm pretty good at my job. I can design, I can develop, I can do stuff. So I will probably find clients out there. I mean, my prices will be, I thought, low compared to, you know, standard agencies and the price I saw over people paying my corporations to do stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
So I was feeling pretty confident I will find stuff. So my plan was, okay, first of all, you're going to conferences. that was the first thing.
Yeah, I remember you were like on every second one, dude.
Dude, I did all of them. The first probably 4 months, I did Smashing Conf, I did Beyond Taiwan, all the major front-end development plus design conferences I went in, because this is a thing that you can't really do when you work for corporations. You have like one or two per year and that's it. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to network, like I'm going to meet all of them. Like, yes, I did that. That was disappointing big time, because most people that go to conferences are other people like you. You don't really find clients there. You find people, yeah, colleagues, probably.
Yeah.
Buddies, but you're not going to find clients.
Really. Yeah, people who feel your pain.
Exactly.
But I think also it depends probably also what conference you go to, right?
Yeah, I went to expert conferences. People in my fields. What I should have done is probably to go to, I don't know, a bakery conference, perhaps, because those people need websites too.
Exactly.
And that's the first lesson I learned.
Yeah, I think there's an insight there.
Yeah,
Because it's funny you say it, like my mate Andy Wojnarowski, Shared some office space. We'll talk about office space just now. I shared some office space with him. And he actually went to go see Gary Vee. He was in Poland recently. And that is like not entirely a design slash service design. I mean, where his expertise primarily lies. And he came back smiling his ass off. Because he went there and wasn't a design conference. And he made so many contacts, got so many insights. So I think what you just mentioned about... You know, it's not necessarily thinking about where your contacts could be, but look at parallel industries, right? To go and find, or to conferences to get enriched.
Exactly.
Because if you're going to go to a design conference, you might sharpen up the old toolkit. And I mean, I do think they are relevant, especially if you know you're weak at. So for example, I'm quite excited to go to a little bit of a punt to product camp in Gdynia. First of all, haven't been in that environment. I don't know, you know, what is the vibe there like? I'm also super weak when it comes to the actual kind of deeper understanding of the vibe around product development, for example. You know, the formal stuff. So I'm keen to go see that, but I don't necessarily think I'm going to go to Gdynia to make big business deals there. Mm-hmm. If I want to make business deals, I need to diversify. But rambling on. Yes, sir.
Yeah. No, that was it. That was very naive for me.
And you were like closing into like burnout stage. I think that's also the time that you said to me, Vanna, like, I'm stepping away from sitting behind a microphone and editing.
That was a little later. Because what happened is, okay, going to conferences, first of all, it's you burn cash, first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to find a place, you need to... Even my case, I didn't really have to buy tickets because most of those conferences I applied as a volunteer. And I worked.
Oh, that's a cool move.
Basically, I exchanged my time and my strength for a ticket. So I met amazing people. No questions about that. I met Sarah Sweden, Nadia Bremer. I met Chris Elliman. I mean, some of the star and front-end developments. And that was amazing on that side. The thing is that, as Gary Vee says, cash is oxygen. And when cash goes out, you're like, okay, I need to find clients now. Okay, I did those conferences. I'm better. You know, I know CSS Grid. I know all that stuff. I'm pretty good. But I need to find clients. And you realize that the skill set to find clients is not the one that you learned or that you built. Because finding clients when you work for a corporation is a very, very different job than finding clients when you work for as a freelance.
Exactly.
You need to go out, first of all, try to, you know, to build that network, to build those contacts. And I thought I had a pretty big network, you know, those thousands of people on LinkedIn, and useless. Believe me, useless. Because those thousands of people were all working for other corporations or big companies.
Exactly.
And those companies don't work with freelancers. They just don't. They are going to work with, you know, the big four, they are going to work with big agencies. Some of the guys who interviewed.
Yeah, with these like existing relationships and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, in the end, dude, like, I don't want to like make this all about like bad stuff. I mean, because I know you went through a massive dip, right? But the thing is, you started like gaining traction at some stage. Like, how did that happen?
So after a few months of educating myself about basically freelancing and the business of freelancing. And how did I, first of all, I should say, how did I educate myself? I asked people that we interviewed, I asked people around that I met previously in conferences that I knew were freelance, and I basically gathered notes and then searched, obviously, on the internet, found some very good websites explaining the business of being a freelance, followed guys like Brendan June, like Ami Hoy. And basically, I did 3 months of intensive sales studies because I was like, I have the skills. You know, that was the most frustrating. I was like, I know how to do all that stuff. I can do all that stuff for people, but people don't know me and they're not really and the people I know are not really interested to work with freelancers. So who exactly are the people that are going to pay for my services? And I did little jobs. You know, I went in figuring out, oh, you know, I'm going to build design systems for, you know, that's not going to happen. I started with logos.
Dude, I think your first project, money. I mean, let's be honest, like, and this is also aligned with some of the stuff that I want to share, but I mean, one of your first projects was a logo design for one of our former guests, right?
Yes. Yeah. That was exactly
And there's nothing
that.
Wrong with that. I mean, I think that's kind of one of the things that got you like going.
Exactly. So we had a guest around January, around June, he calls me back, contact me back. Oh, May, April.
Yeah.
He contacted me back, tell me, okay, do you have that project? I actually don't know a lot of graphic designers and designers in general. Do you know how to do that? Logo typing. I was like, okay, that's not thing I do every day. That's not my specialty, but I do that. I do that for myself. I did that for people before in my previous job. So I can do that for you. So I started with that and he was really happy. So he told me, oh, can you work on my website? I was like, okay. And
so it starts,
from
right?
From that little event, everything snowballed. And what I realized is, and it's going to look obvious, but your network is so amazingly important. Everybody knows that, right? But it's the quality of your network that counts. It's not the number of people that you know. It's the number of people that know they can rely on you. And there is a huge difference between both. You can know, I don't know, 100,000 people on Facebook, but you need to have people that have in their mind, okay, I need to do that thing. This guy knows how to do that. I like that guy. I want to work with him.
Mm.
And for people to go through that process, they need to trust you. And build trust is the most hardest job you will have as a freelance.
Yeah, and that trust is fragile, man. I mean, that's the one thing I'm super nervous about. Mm-hmm. It's like screwing up trust with someone, because I recently did a project, I ran some workshops with a client and did the delivery, handed it over and whatever, and then there's this deathly silence. And then you go, you know, like, shit, I hope they're happy. Or like, and then it turns out at some stage that they couldn't even access the files, but it wasn't a priority for them. They're living the corporate life, right? What I did for them was like a small little minuscule thing that they are attending to. And then at some stage I had to resend them the material again and that kind of stuff. But for me, running my own little business, I'm going like, damn, I don't want to screw this up.
Hmm.
And it's not necessarily about having that next piece of business. It's not like I'm a hungry dog sitting out, I need some more business. It's about, you know that someone's going to have a conversation at some stage and they're going to go, yeah, I did some work with this Vanner guy, with this Jonathan. Yeah. You know, I could recommend him. And those things are the crazy stuff. But dude, I just wanted to add something around business because, if I may, because I wanted to talk a little bit about my situation, because key thing that I realized and put this as a little bookmark maybe in the back of your mind is that when I left, I thought that I will be able to do more work here in Polandia. I don't want to necessarily go anywhere else. For me, I have a home here, I have a family here, I'm invested in this country. And I thought I was going to do a little bit more work. And I did do one or two small projects. I mean, a shout out to the guys from TEDx, because even though it's not been a paying gig, being brought in on their volunteer team to do some event design work with them, and to get to meet the team there is like super. I mean, I see them as one of my clients, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't really manage to get traction. I mean, people are super willing to bring you in, right? But language has been a bigger problem than I thought it's going to be. And maybe I'm misinterpreting. I love to have people's comments about it. But language is huge, man. You can't walk into a boardroom or into a meeting room or to run a local workshop, for example. And I've done a few, but I feel so bad when people have to swap over to English, you know?
Yeah, I actually lost a gig because of my very, very average Polish knowledge. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can understand that. I was supposed to get in as a developer, and most developers who learn speak English as well as I do. And I couldn't speak Polish as well as they do. So there was like, yeah, that's not going to work out. In my case, my network went back, ironically, to my French contacts. I went on all that way at the end of the day. So I have a few French clients. I have one client from Germany. I had one client from Japan for some reason. and my main clients now are based in the US. I don't have any clients locally in Poland, even if I would like to. Hopefully that will open in the future. We'll see.
Yeah, I told you, and you're going to be laughing your ass off, but I'm back to university to try and master this language, which I would love to do, man. Yeah. I want to have a conversation with someone in Polish, but I'm finding it super difficult. I mean, I don't think, let's not be negative, but I don't think I'm going to be proficient in business language very soon, but I'm attempting. My goal is to be able to do business here. The one challenge with working in Poland is that I find that the rates are quite low in this side. And sometimes I get a bit angry because I think people, and in fact, I think I'm actually working with someone who thinks that already, is that they think that because, you know, you live here in Poland, that you're going to be cheap, right? Yep. You're going to...
Big time.
I think I need to clarify, it's going to be great quality work at a price you can afford. Right. Mm. And I don't think that's always necessarily fair. Maybe it's fair towards me, but it's not always fair to some of the talent here in Central Europe, because there's some super talent, hardworking people here, man. And they need to get their worth. But I would say like probably we need to see more like innovation and stuff happening from this side of the world. Not that there isn't any happening, but damn it, I'm rambling again. But I think the point there is that I thought my network is going to be, you know, I'm going to do more work here, but I just wanted to tap into something you said that I think is super important. That's the other learning for me, is that you need to identify your niche. And I think we spoke about it a little bit before, but
yeah.
You're a guy living in Poland. I think you kind of had this French thing going on. I don't know, from your accent, you can kind of figure that out. And I feel like you kind of started, you also have kind of, I don't want to dive too deep into that, but you have like an Asian connection too. Yeah. Good contacts there. And you've started playing on that niche. And I think of a second piece of advice that I'd give to someone who wants to go out and do their own thing is like, figure out your niche. I'm also kind of doing that. I have a very interesting community of people that I tap into. The experiences on community that is connected to this crazy, I've spoken about it so many times, people are sick and tired of it, but this College of Extraordinary Experiences, one of my best and most joyous projects that I've been working on in the last 6 months was actually through them. Two people that I met through the college, they invited me to come and build some stuff with them, and it's been a freaking roller coaster ride of note up to this point. I mean, it's still ongoing process, but it's like that is the one small community that I had. I turned to them as well, and I'm helping them with the next event, for example, and working with them. So I have like a real vested interest in this event. It's weird. I kind of fallen into this whole event design space, which I find super interesting.
But this is what I discovered. You know, there is this quote from Mike Tyson saying that even though you have a plan, you will lose it at the first punch. It's kind of exactly what
everybody's
happens.
Got a plan until he gets punched in the
exactly,
face.
Exactly that one. So the market will define what your value is at one point. You can go in, especially going, both of us coming from corporations. You always have board roles when you have some responsibilities at corporations. You can always be part of that, and you know you're eating in every soups. In I don't even know if it's an English expression anyway, but yeah, you're eating in every soups. When you're freelance, it's much more difficult to do that, because then you need to justify your value, and you're competing versus literally the world. Everybody is competing versus you, and you need to compete on price. So you need to, on one way, to explain why you're more expensive than those dudes on, you know, Fiverr and all those platforms where for $5 you can have a website, and then try to explain why. So if you do that, why shouldn't I work with an agency if your price is like that one? So what are your credentials? So in my case, so I went in really thinking that I will continue to work on, you know, pure design systems and stuff. What I'm discovering also 1 year and a half later is that my value is mainly into project management.
Who would have thought? But actually, I do like, yeah. I wanted to like rip you off for that, but man, you're a project manager of note. Like if I see some of the feedback you used to give me for the podcast, I go like,
and
I swore you a little bit in my mind, but you're like, and it's funny how it bubbles to the top, right? That kind of the market says, cool, we need that.
Yeah,
skill set. It. Bring it.
Basically, at one point, what happened on two or three of my projects is that I started to do like manual design work for them and organizing around it. And then when they started to actually, you know, develop path processes, they knew me, right? And they were like, okay, you seem to be pretty organized. Can you organize that too? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. Because, yeah, you know, design, you know, development, you're not weird to talk to, except for your French accent.
We don't know what he's saying, but it feels great.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, the thing is, I mean, you're just talking about something else that you're saying these keywords and it gets me rolling, right? I mean, I can hear that you see yourself pretty much as a freelancer, right? And that's a great space to own and to earn your living. But I've been like resisting this idea of freelancing. And I'll tell you why. Like, I'm a bit worried about this label of freelancer because I always see freelancing as like, I mean, there's different interpretations of this, is that this is a gun for hire, right? You will do anything for the right amount of money. I mean, of course, you set up the conditions yourself, right? It's not like you're just a mercenary, but it's kind of like that, right? Like if the money's right, you'll do some stuff, right? And that can grow into whatever.
Yeah, right.
Comment. I mean, I don't know if you feel like that.
No.
And then I'll ramble the rest of my story.
No, I totally do agree. It's... You think you go in with those nice ideas of what your job will be, but yeah, cash is oxygen. So you need to, at one point, you need to just lower your expectations, do what you have to do, and do as much work as possible, because work will lead to work. That's the thing. You need to avoid traps, though, because people will be out there to screw you.
That's the thing, man.
This is incredible. I, working independently, I realized how protected we are when we work for corporations, how all those difficult clients that can't work sometimes with corporations, so they end out with you. And it's, that was difficult. I do understand some of my friends who became freelance and who decide to, you know, just leave it and go back to it. I can totally understand that. This is not a door that I'm closing, to be honest, even for myself.
Leading on from that, what I've decided, and this has been tough, I mean, for someone, you know, if you go down this route, I don't know if it's really worked for me yet. So it's, for me, it's too early. But right at the beginning, I actually, my first dream was to say, I wanted to start my own little boutique agency. You know, I would love to be the next AJ in Smart or whatever. And early on, I realized that I didn't want to do the freelance thing. So, and unfortunately, if you don't want to do the freelance thing, you give up on stuff. So I've given up on a few projects, and there's a few projects that I haven't really pursued that hard because I knew it was like, okay, cool. I'm going to have to work through the night for not a lot of money. And probably I'm basically doing someone else's job that, I mean, there's no... What I'm trying to say is there's no reason why Vanna should be doing this job. And not that I'm saying that I'm great, but I mean, Jono could do it. Vanna could do it. There's no differentiating factor. There's no Vanna element to this. And I'm sure the same for you. Like there's no Jono element. Like then I'm just doing it for the money. And I decided not to do that. Now, remember, Poland, I'm not like the door's not being kicked down. And that meant that for the first 2-3 months of my... business, it was a very lonely time. So I was getting really stressed out. But then what happened is that through this persistence, I started having conversations with the right people. The podcast helped a lot. So I had two podcasts at that time. So I mean, the one I had to give the one up, hung on to this one barely. But they started helping me also get business. So the content strategy is super important. But now I'm starting to gain traction and getting myself into the projects that I like. Like is probably a tough word because it's the stuff that I think I'm most aligned with to move forward. I just don't know how sustainable that is. The other thing I wanted to say though, and this is like completely, I should have mentioned the first thing, is that I kind of wiped the idea of having my little agency off the table for now.
Yeah.
The thing is, I started thinking because when I had my corporate job, a lot of the work that I was doing was keeping my team fed. My big job was to go out, work with my boss, and bring in the business. You know, bring in the stuff that my team's going to do to make us as sustainable as a business. And I started thinking, like, how? Like, I don't want to, if I want to be dipping into that. Like, I don't want to be working my ass off to make something like that yet. Hmm. I just don't know if I'm ready or if I have the traction or whatever to do that, right? I'm super nervous about hiring someone. Of course, I would love to be able to employ people because then it means that I'm also like pushing back into the economy, which is, I think, like, this is as a foreigner would be like super valuable for the economy. But at the moment, they need to settle for my tax because I don't know, dude. Like, I feel like I don't want to dip into that space of chasing business to keep a door open. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because people fool themselves thinking that when they build an agency or a business that the people that you employ, and this is also a gross generalization, is going to be as invested in that business as you are. And you know what? They're not. And they shouldn't be, because the secret is it's not their damn business. It's your business.
Yep.
So if you think that you're going to hire 5 or 6 people and they're going to work through the night, give up their family time, their public holidays, whatever, and maybe for some startups it works like that initially, whatever, you know, I don't want to generalize, but that's not the case. And the thing is, that's why I'm kind of like, I need to figure other shit out first before I step into that space.
Yeah. That's actually one of the main pain points of starting companies, that those founders think that, you know, I'm going to give you 1% of stock and you will be as invested as me to do things. No, it's still your company. It's just settle things for disappointment on both sides.
Man, and the thing is that kind of leads me into the other point I wanted to make. You need a job. And this is a difficult statement to make because initially my pursuit was to search for, and it still is, to do work that I think is meaningful. And not that I'm super selfish, but I wanted to be meaningful for my clients too. But I wanted to make an impact. But for someone out there who wants to do this and say, like, should I be giving up my job to do this? I don't think you should do that. You need a job. You need to pay rent. You need to send your kid to school. You need to buy fuel for your car. You need to pay your metro ticket. Money, you need a job. The only reason I kind of said that I think my decision was okay, and I actually want to hear the same from you, is that the reason I think, and it's okay to say, yeah, we fucked up, right? Because I don't think I screwed up. I don't regret anything. But the reason I would say that I didn't stick to my job to do or pursue what I love is that my job required for me to give 110%. And I bought into it and I was happy to do that. That meant that I didn't have the time to invest in what I wanted to pursue. That meant I had to give up my job to pursue what I wanted to pursue. Now, did I make a mistake? Time will tell. So, I mean, I've also in my business, I shaped my business in such a way that I've now found a client that for me has become the job part of my company. So not entirely as sustainable as I want it to be. So this client is not like in quotes, like if you use business language, a cash cow, but it is a job.
Yeah.
It's a tough client. I need to do a lot of work for them and they reward me in turn, but it's a job. It feeds my other pursuits. For you, I mean, you also gave up a salary to pursue your dreams. And I know for a fact that you also need money to pay your rent. How do you feel about this idea in retrospect?
First things first, I think that if I had to do it all over again, I would not take a job just after my studies and I would have been a freelancer, because that's the only time when you're actually free to do those mistakes, you know? You paid your student loans, you don't have responsibilities, you don't have a mortgage to pay, you don't have a family and all of that. So you can, you know, go in, try 1-2 years, learn basically the business of selling your skills on the market, and it comes at a low return. Now you don't have as many skills at least, but at least it gives you feedback about how it is to put yourself on the market, which is
spikes your experience as well, right?
Yeah, that was the one big surprise for me. So if I had to do it again, I would probably try to find clients before leaving my company, big time.
Yeah,
I would have, and not clients, not people like, yeah, I will work with you. No, I mean people who will sign something with me.
Yeah,
and so I can
even get it started, maybe, right?
Yeah, so I can get in the job directly after my job. You see what I mean? So yeah. I can get something like a switch, a green line that I can follow, and yeah. I'm like, okay, I have that, and I can, you know, do my follow my adventures on the other side. But I know that I have enough to pay my bills at the end of the month,
after
that bare minimum. So I would have done that because I didn't have that until, I know, 1 year
after
being
yeah.
freelance, and that means 1 year of stress and counting your grocer at the end of each
yeah.
month. Yeah, that was difficult. The other thing I would have changed would have been probably to, I thought I was educated about sales. I didn't know shit about sales. You need to have to, you know.
Yeah. yeah.
It's sales as a, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, but sales as a freelancer is really, really difficult, especially when you're an introvert. When you have to go out. That's your job. That's part of your job. You have to go out, and you have to, even if you have a good time with someone, if that person might even slightly be possibly one day your client, you need to go out and, you know, have your pitch. Hey, I'm John. It needs to be like a reflex. And I understand much better my friends in the US now. Because when I lived in the US, they were able to do that like in a second. And yeah, I mean, they learned that stuff. So yeah, so there was that. I would have been following that. So I would have a client. I would get much more informed about being a freelancer. I will probably plan also what are the other things I want to be better at. Because one of the issue of being free is that you're free to make mistakes. And you're free to go in all those rabbit holes with, oh, I need to learn this fancy new stuff. Oh, it's very nice. And then, yeah, but there are no clients who are going to be interested in that. You know, one of the things when you become a freelancer is that you're going to learn all those technologies and do all. What I learned at the end of the day is that you're going to use the technology or the platform that your client is using. For example, we have a lot of design walls between Figma, Sketch, Framer, and all of that. I use all of them because my clients, depending on clients, I can't impose my design tool. Sometimes I can, it's very rare, but if my clients tell me, oh, we use Sketch, hey, dude, you're going to use Sketch. If they tell you use Framer, you're going to use Framer. So when I read those, you know, magazines and stuff saying, oh, yeah, you need to use that tool, and I was like, yeah, that's not real life, dude.
The luxury is not that great. Yeah.
You're just going to use. Same for technical stacks for front-end developers. Same thing. They are all fighting between Angular or React, Vue. When you're a freelancer, you don't care. Your clients, I had a client who told me, we work on React. Yeah, I'm going to learn React, and I'm going to do it, even if I approve your Vue. Bad luck, dude. You're going to use for another
project. Yeah.
You just go with what is there. And sometimes you have choices. I mean, I know some amazing freelancers, and those guys they can choose from clients, and you know.
Yeah, it depends on clients, also your like status in the environment.
Yeah, so. I'm not at this level yet. If somebody tells me tomorrow that there is a new framework used by I don't know who, for the right price, of course I'm going to learn it. Of course I'm going to do it.
It's difficult though, because you get like framework freak out. Like, I mean, I'm so bad, man. Like, I'm trying to pick up Framer. And the only, like, maybe that's where you and me are a bit different, because like you're chasing everything. And I don't think necessarily I'm going to do any business anytime soon. I mean, I actually built some prototypes the other day, dude. You would be proud. I had to do some prototype work, get my like hands dirty again. It was great to do some like real UX work again, like very high level, but fired up Sketch. First time ever, because I'm an OmniGraffle man. And but necessity got me. I mean, I've had Sketch on my machine for a long time, been paying the licensing or whatever. And necessity got me into that game. But super keen on Framer, for example. But the only reason I'm keen on Framer is like I hope to rekindle some of my coding expertise to get into that space. But it's been slow because with all the intention to actually do the learning, because I'm busy with other project work, I just don't have the time to get into it. I think I'll be squeezed into that project work, like you say, when a client requires it. And for me, that might never happen.
Yeah, big time. So I love to learn. I mean, I will say that the reason I became a product designer is because there was a lot of fancy stuff to learn and I liked it. And you can put your hand on so many steps from, you know, UX research to proper UX, then UI design to actually coding interfaces. I mean, I was able to fulfill all my intellectual needs, I will say. And thing is, I prepared when I went out, I prepared a study plan. Like, well done. Yeah. I had super long multi-step study plan. I was like, okay, June I'm going to learn this, July I'm going to learn that, August that.
I think I saw that list. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I didn't trash it. I created a system that works for me and that doesn't overwhelm me. Because when you're a freelancer also, it's a segue we need to take. Loneliness is going to be a thing that you will need to manage.
Yeah.
And you can't really, until you spend 2 or 3 months working by yourself, and honestly, people who are going in cybercafe and stuff, you're still by yourself. There can be a ton of people around you, but it's still you and you. There's nobody else next to you. You can talk about the projects or anything.
No, that's been the project-based conversations that is kind of not non-existing.
Exactly.
That's a tough one from time to time, yeah.
And it's difficult. It's especially when I'm introvert, right? But I like to have a few people around me and I like to discuss about my projects. And I loved to have a team. I loved my team and I preserve jobs. I still think about you guys if you're listening.
He misses you, man.
Yeah, big time. I loved my team. I had an awesome manager. I had a fantastic team. And it was just good.
I can say the same about my old team. I've seen them from time to time and I stay in touch. Yeah, you miss these bastards, you know, like they add a bit of a flavor to your day.
And you miss interactions. I mean, human interactions. I mean, my girlfriend had to set up like, our own basically planning for me to get out, to get socialized like a dog, basically.
She takes you out for a walk.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You're joking, but it's almost that. Because it's so easy. Because the moment that there is a direct relationship between your money and your time
becomes an interesting relationship. I find it myself as well.
You don't have off days anymore. Sunday is the same thing as Monday for me, or Tuesday. It's just a day I can work. Every time, if my brain is able to process information, then I should either work or study. And it's so easy to forget everything else. I still watch TV shows and things with my girlfriend, but I kind of stop watching anything alone. And I don't play video games or games, board games, or anything anymore. Like, I was like, oh, you're going to be freelance, you'll have time to play? No way. You're going. So there is the imposter syndrome when you're at work and you feel that. And I discovered another one. Like, oh gosh, I have time. Do I have enough money to pay my bills? I shouldn't do anything. I should just work and
pay
my bills.
There's kind of this guilt that kicks in. I felt it as well. I mean, my experience is not entirely as yours. I kind of enjoy the isolation a little bit. I've been working in a lot of teams. I feel like digitally I connect a lot, but also I have a family. You might have heard in the background already, like a little kid screaming. So he's constantly part of my life. And I mean, I don't want to like have violin music playing in the background now, but one of the key considerations for me doing this whole experience was that I felt that I was missing key stages of his life. Yeah. I mean, he's 2 years old now. And I was like going, I don't want to be like this old fart. And then I've missed all the cool things. And then I have to manage the teenage years. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, you're so right. We have been complaining for like almost 1 hour now about the bad things.
I mean, I don't want to complain. But the thing is like, but for me, there's been key learnings. But the one thing that I like really value is that I've been able to spend a bit more time with him. I do feel like, for example, like I do feel the pressure of work coming in. And also the other thing that we haven't, I don't want to deep dive this, is that I'm doing, and you're also doing work for other time zones. That's a damn nightmare, man. Because like, I mean, you can't really force these people not to have their work time. And from time to time, not a lot, I have meetings at like 12 o'clock at night or like 6 o'clock when it's like right when the babysitter leaves and my wife comes back from her work. And it's like insane. You go like, oh man. And people are getting annoyed with you because that happens. I also find what is difficult for me is that being a person who's been working for a steady pace. And I mean, the pace that I used to work out was like 8 o'clock and then sometimes to 9 o'clock to 7 o'clock at night. Now that you're a little more flexible, I think the people around you do not really always understand that flexibility.
Yeah, I see.
Means like, the guy's probably watching like...
Yeah, you need to set
like porn or like, he's like farting around on Facebook. Like, so you have to kind of like set that kind of stuff up. Of course, I'm standing now in my little office talking shit to you instead of working. So they have a point. But that is the interesting part of this whole thing, is that you have to set up that dynamics, right?
Yeah. It's totally right. You need to set up a new set of boundaries, say when you're working, when you're not. Because, I mean, if I say for my girlfriend, I'm always in the same place. I spend most of my life in those 8 meter square that is my home office. So, and she doesn't have, we set up rules, so she knows when I'm working and when I'm not, or when I'm available to talk or anything. But we had to set this up. But to go on the reason why I feel like we gave all the reason why you should not be a freelance. I don't close that door to go back in a corporation, but I don't plan it like either. For me,
no,
I don't
I'm
see
the same.
Myself
I,
coming back.
I have a better perspective. At the moment, I have this open mind around. I mean, that's probably the negative of this is that I pursued this idea with building something, which is kind of not, it's not fallen apart, but that building of something I thought was going to be a team, is going to be a little agency, is going to be X, Y, Z. That is kind of like shifted to the background a little bit. Now I need to figure out what it is that I want to build. And if that the building of what I want to build is part of rejoining a company or figuring out what I'm doing here and really building something here, that would be a big win for me, of course. But I'm not really putting any other options out of perspective. The one thing I would say though, like just listening to us waffling on, is that I have a good mate in South Africa. I mean, she, when we were both at ad agency, we both went, she did a few stints of freelancing work before. And this is years ago, man. This is like, shit. Man, I'm getting old. But it's like probably like 10 or 15 years ago that she did a first run of freelancing. And then she started like a little agency that fell apart. And she joined me at one of the big four. And now she's, I think she's still like employed. But some of the things that we are talking about, she spoke to me back then already, right? Mm. Boundaries, like being able to feed yourself, decision about how you want to build a business. Do I make certain business decisions? It's like this kind of, I don't think what we are talking about, I think the interesting thing that we are talking about, and I know, Jono, you're not as old as I am, but I think we both, in a weird foreign country, we are a little bit older. We've done a bit of our stints at corporations, and now we're back, we boom right into this whole doing it yourself kind of vibe. And we're going through a lot of learning that a lot of people have done before.
I mean, those are the learnings like that you need to live, that you really need to go through it to understand them. I do value that experience so much. I first of all, I'm a much better professional right now than I did. It's like I'm really, really much better than before in terms of management skills, but mainly technical skills. And yeah, I'm just very proud of myself on that side. I went down a lot, like really down. Last year was probably the worst year of my life, probably, in terms of, because I was angry at myself, I was angry at my choices, I wasn't achieving, as you said, I wasn't able to achieve the plans I set up. And after my, you know, very linear, very easygoing, I didn't thought it was easygoing at the time, but yeah, at the end of the day, easygoing corporate life, when you know, you set your goals at the start of the year and you're like, oh, I'm going to achieve, my manager is going to promote me, you get your promotion and you get your bonus and all is good. And you do that for 12 years and you forget that's life. And then you out and you realize, oh, dude, that's not how life works. I mean, on a positive note, though, not only I feel I'm a much better professional than before, but I do believe, a much better human being.
Yeah, I mean, dude, so I wanna wrap this up for a sec, right? And asking you, like, if you had to do this again, I mean, it's such a wanky question, but if you had to do this again, like, what would you do differently? What you know, like, so, I mean, I think we both agree, number one, no regrets. There's some positive stuff, there's some tough stuff. What would you do differently if you had to do it again?
Sales. If there was one thing, I had the technical skills. I still have the technical skills. What I didn't have at all was the ability to sell myself as a freelancer. So if I had to do it again, instead of spending 3 months or 4 months worth of money into technical skills, I will do probably a sales for freelancer workshop and get out and create one of those landing page and create a newsletter, create content, much more content, get out there and invest like 60 to 70% of my time just on that. And the other 30%, 20, 30% into technical stuff, because I mean, that's why we became a freelance at the end of the day. But most of it in sales, no questions.
Man, I think we're both on the same page here, because I mean, I don't necessarily term it sales, but I think it comes down to the same thing. Value proposition. Like, what the hell are you bringing to the market? Either if you're a freelancer or you're starting a business or whatever, what is your value that you're bringing? And when I say that, and I say it a few times, is like, what is the problem you're solving? What kind of problems are you solving and for whom? That's the other thing that I think is very key, because thinking that there's this kind of pseudo market out there doesn't exist. You need to find the market. And I think what is important, where a lot of people miss a trick, is like, what is your key market? So for example, something that I'm trying to work on is, okay, great. So I'm in Central Europe. I'm a South African. I speak English. Some of it like that I've just mentioned is like, maybe Achilles heels, but how can I flip it around? Like, what kind of audience am I serving? So can I cooperate with a South African company and introduce Central European talent there, vice versa? You know, what kind of skill sets do I have and what makes it unique and what does that audience look like? And, you know, basically how can people, you know, talk about you. So I'm kind of trying to figure that out at the moment. And I think that people need to figure that out before they take the leap like I did. The other thing that I support 100% what you're saying is the creation of content. Now, but the thing is, the challenge is consistent creation of content. Yeah. Now, if you look at this podcast, I mean, I've been struggling I mean, I've had some brilliant people on here, and this podcast has paid off, paid his dues, right? And also the other one that I worked on paid his dues in sense of giving back. I mean, it's not always monetary, but it leads to conversations. It leads to other people understanding what I'm doing. It leads to business, and you need to create content. And I'm so nervous about this because, you know, like Seth Godin and those guys talk about that. But what they're not saying is like push bullshit content into the world. And this is where it gets tricky because you need to, you know, make sense. You know, yeah. I scroll through my LinkedIn feed and maybe I'm also guilty of that, but I see so many people with their cameras in their faces talking shit. You know, like you really need to think about what's the value that you're bringing to people and does it really make sense, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But you need to do that consistently. You need to plan it.
That's the thing. Make something, push content for pushing content. I mean, I think if we can do that with just with tweeting and comment stuff, there are a lot of people are doing that on Twitter, for example.
That's massive noise, man. How do you stand out?
Yeah. So you need to know who you are going to address and what do those people want to learn. So, yeah.
I think it goes in that circle, right? So when you start understanding, use the content to figure out your value. Then use the content to push it to that niche audience that you're trying to figure out who that is. See if it resonates. It's like, I mean, damn lean thing all over again. Here
yeah,
I go.
Yeah, but it's like the same design process. We just apply it to ourselves instead of our clients.
Yeah. So, Jono, thanks for joining me, dude. It's good to hear from you. Catch you later, buddy.
You take care, my friend.
Thanks for listening to Block Thinking. You can find more information and the show notes for this episode at www.blockthinking.com. That is blockthinking without the K.com. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast platforms. We thrive on critique, so feel free to leave comments on iTunes or get hold of us directly. Thanks for listening.